It's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. Podcast host Randy Fine, a narcissistic abuse expert and the author of the groundbreaking book Close Encounters of the Worst Kind and the captivating memoir Cliff Edge Road, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. So I have some really exciting news for you to share with you today. And if you haven't already gotten something to write on, get a pen or a pencil and some paper. A small piece is all you need so that you can write down what I'm going to give you. You know, so many of our painful pasts have been roadblocks in our life. And it's often very difficult to excavate into those emotions and find out exactly what is causing the problem. But the end result is that we suffer. So I developed a comprehensive course in the spirit of personal growth called Letting Go of Past Pain and Creating the Life You Deserve. This course will be on my website, randyfine.com. You can access it through the menu. And I'm going to give you a coupon code to give you a discount off the price. This is for a limited time only. I'm just doing this for a few days. So if you are interested in this course, you need to register before July 14th. And you will save $50 off of the price. And the coupon code to redeem that special offer is P as in Paul, A as in Apple, D as in Donut, N as in Nancy, K as in Keith, U as in Ugly, Y as in Yes, and then the number 3, PADNKUY 3. If you use that coupon code, this course is not going to be launched until tomorrow, so you will not be able to use it until tomorrow. I'm launching it brand new tomorrow, just finished creating it. So I'm really excited to share it with you because this course is going to take you on a powerful healing journey from your unresolved pain all the way to emotional freedom. There's so much content in here. And if you are truly, truly ready to heal from the pain of your past, this is the course for you. This takes you on, after you go through this journey of healing the pain, you will be able to create whatever future you desire. I'm going to help you lift all the baggage that has been holding you down. So go to randyfine.com, go to the menu, and go down to My Courses, or Courses, Online Courses, I think it says, Online Courses, and click on that, and it will take you right to the course. So I hope you'll take me up on this offer of just a few days, and the discount I'm offering you with the coupon code PADNKUY3. Okay? So, with that out of the way, after that announcement, which I was so excited to share with you, I'm going to start the show, and today is Free Advice Friday, the day that I will take your calls and answer your questions about narcissistic abuse, or any comments you may want to share about narcissistic abuse. And the focus of today is going to be dysfunction of sibling relationships in narcissistic personality disorder families. This is something that I hear from so many people, and it is a very, very painful aspect of this kind of abuse. When it hits families and there is a narcissist heading up that family, everybody in that family is in survival mode, and nobody really knows how to survive all this chaos and confusion and abuse. So each person is in their own corner trying to deal with it the best that they can. And generally, every child will deal with it differently and based on what their role in the family was, that will also determine how they deal with it. But because everybody is in their own corner, there is no cohesiveness to the family relationship, to the parent-children relationship, and to the sibling relationships. No cohesiveness. And if there is an enabling parent, well, they're in their own corner too, trying to survive because they're trying to keep their relationship together. And so even though they may appear to be the nicer of the two, when push comes to shove, you know who they're going to side with, because that is survival for them. So I just recently, I want to tell you a story about what happened to me recently, because I tell you that I am not immune to any of this, and that no matter how far I come, there are always things that creep up. So I have two sisters who I love and adore and was very, very close with. But throughout the years, it's been very unpredictable. Sometimes two of us like each other and one is on the out. Sometimes those two like each other and I'm on the out. It always has changed. And we all profess to love each other. But it keeps altering. And I happen to be the squeaky wheel in my family. That's why I'm so outspoken. I am the squeaky wheel. I am the one that is here to reveal this information and help all of you. So often I'm on the outs. When I wrote my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, it created such a estrangement from both of my sisters, because in this book, they read about their lives, and it was way too painful for them to deal with, even though they often shared with me that they had dealt with it, and they knew how to do it. So one of my sisters, who I shared a room with as a kid, I mean, she was like my second mother, okay? We were so close, but she was the invisible child in the family. And as the invisible child, she never felt heard and she never felt loved. She said when I was born, or since I was the third, I was the baby, she said after I was born, my mother stopped looking at her. And her life changed. She was 5 years old. My other sister was 7, but she was more of a survivor. But Michelle became the invisible child. And so for her entire life, she felt invisible. And no matter how much someone loved her, she never trusted it. She never felt worthy. So throughout the years of our adult lives, it has been back and forth. There have been times where she has completely withdrawn herself from me, telling me that I'm part of the problem with the family, and she can't trust me, and I don't love her, and I don't, you know, she just rejected me based on a very skewed perspective. Well, long story short, this sister in the last year was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And Lou Gehrig's disease is a horrible, horrible way to go. Your body just stops functioning little by little by little. You lose your muscles. You lose your voice. But you don't lose your mind. Your mind stays there. So you are perfectly conscious that there is no body functioning around you. So my sister developed this disorder. And in addition to this disorder, she also developed a disorder where she had difficulty breathing. Well, she ended up, she went down very, very fast, and she ended up in home hospice. And when she was in home hospice, I reached out through texts because she really couldn't speak. It was very hard for her to speak, so texts were much better. I reached out to her. I let her know how much I loved her. I let her know how much I appreciated all that she has done for me in my life. And I said everything that I wanted to say because it didn't seem as if she was going to have much time left. I wanted to come see her. She lives about 4.5 hours north of me. I was not allowed to come see her. And I felt little by little shut completely out of the experience by her and her husband, my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law would not return my calls. He wouldn't respond to me. And so this was so dating to me because I couldn't say goodbye to my sister. I couldn't see her. I couldn't say goodbye to her. She was in home hospice for, I don't know, it might have been a month. It really wasn't long. And then they told her she needed to go to inpatient hospice. And while she was in inpatient hospice, I tried to reach out to my brother-in-law, and I got no response. My other sister, my sister on the other hand, the other one, was calling every day and talking to both of them until my sister couldn't talk. And then she was texting until my sister couldn't text. And then that was it. But she would call my brother-in-law every day. So she wasn't on the outs, but I was. So she's in this inpatient facility and she doesn't last for very long. Every day she's getting closer and closer to death. And I'm left out in the cold. And I can't share this experience. I can't help her. I can't say anything. I was completely shut out of the experience. And then she dies. My brother-in-law didn't tell me she died. My other sister had to tell me. My brother-in-law gave me no information about the funeral. And my other sister didn't either. And I had to find out, I had to scrounge through things, trying to figure it all out. But I had heard that it was going to be videotaped. So I knew I'd be able to watch it, but I wanted to make sure that I could get a hold of the video. It was clear that I was not wanted at the funeral. And the feelings that I had, I struggled with so much. This was so unfair to me. I'm the only person in my family that has risen up above the abuse, the only one. I'm the only person with awareness. I'm the only person who's done everything to heal. And that is a threat to siblings in a narcissistic abuse family. So my siblings didn't trust me. And at times they got even though they weren't really talking to my parents, at times they got even closer to them, which is what typically happens in these situations. My parents didn't go see my sister either. And my other sister told me she lived too far and it was time, it was COVID and she couldn't travel. So my family just, you know, nobody, this was so odd the way that this happened. And so I had a lot to deal with. And when I watched the video, it was about someone I did not even know. I knew aspects of her, but she lived in a community where she showed no one her pain. She was giving. She was helping. She would wake up in the middle of the night to help anybody. She played piano. Everybody loved her piano. She was active in the synagogue. She was so well loved that at her funeral, she was elevated almost to saint status. And this was so confusing for me because I knew her pain. And they didn't. And so what I realized was when I wrote my book and I revealed all the truths that I revealed, she couldn't look away. She associated me with that revelation. And she couldn't hide and she couldn't cover anything up with me because I knew. So she had to just abandon me so that she could live in denial in the place that she lived. So I tell you this story because it is so typical of what happens in these families with sibling relationships. There's nothing normal, healthy, or right about sibling relationships. There are rare situations where siblings do bond together. Sometimes they do. You know, it does happen, and I do know of people who have bonded with, you know, a sister or brother. But what I find is ultimately that relationship gets divided somehow. Because when there is chaos in the family, when something happens in the family, they both take different stances and they can become enemies. They can be at war. Growing up in your family, some of you could have been only children, okay? For those who, and if you're only children, you're probably not listening to this show, but for those of you who had siblings, there is this semblance of understanding that you're supposed to have each other's back, that you're supposed to love each other, that you're supposed to protect each other, that you're supposed to be loyal to each other. It's almost a given that in a family, this is what family members do. And so there are times when it appears like that. But as we get older, sometimes before we get older, siblings can have real problems. Sometimes one of them is a bully. Sometimes there's sexual abuse or molestation from one of the siblings. Sometimes a sibling may turn to alcohol or drugs at a very young age, and that takes them off in a completely different direction. And we want that sibling relationship, because if we've come to terms with the fact that our parents or our parent had narcissistic personality disorder and that we probably had a enabling parent as well, all we have left is our siblings. And we shared things as children. We did. Even if we fought with them, we still shared experiences as children, and we want that relationship. The problem is that relationship is an illusion. It doesn't exist. And the reason it doesn't exist is what I explained to you at the beginning of the show. because everybody is in their own corner trying to survive. Some will do it through pleasing. Some will do it through aggression. Some will do it through withdrawal. Some will do it with dissociation. And at the far end, the far spectrum, some will develop personality disorders. And this is the root of narcissistic personality disorder. It does develop in childhood. So the reason children all cope with it differently is that they don't know how to cope with it. And so they do whatever it takes to exist in that time because they are dependent on this family unit to survive. So they do whatever it takes to get through that time. And often they may not even realize that they're being abused. They're just using these tactics because their intuition, their heart and soul knows that they're being abused. But children don't want to believe that they're abused because, just as I said, there's this assumption that a family is one of love and cohesiveness and loyalty. There is the same. There are things about the word mother and father that confuse us. When we hear father, when we hear mother, we think they love their children. So even if they're beating us black and blue, they're not going to let go of the idea that they love us. In some cases, children do recognize it. And I have had clients who have recognized it. But I'm talking more in general. So there are always exceptions to what I say. But you have a parent who is saying horrible things to you, putting you down, calling you names. And then they may say, I love you. Or they may give you a hug. And what do you hold on to? The hug or the I love you or the gift or whatever it tends to be. You hold on to that and you say, okay, well, that parent does really love me. But children don't come into this world with coping mechanisms, coping abilities. They don't know how to do it. So their subconscious takes over where their conscious mind can't. So all the children are striving. They're trying to survive in this environment, and it's all different. You don't have a matriarch or a patriarch that's leading this family. And you don't have a father narcissist. You don't have a mother narcissist. All you have is a narcissist dressed like a father or a mother. Because those roles get them what they want. But you don't have a mother narcissist and you don't have a father narcissist. All you have is a narcissist disguised as a mother or father so that they can confuse people and get what they want. What they want is narcissistic supply, adoration, admiration, and attention. They want to abuse, they want to manipulate, they want to lie. That is who that person is. So the sibling relationships are extremely, extremely hard. And when you get older, there may be some back and forth. But there are situations where you are thrown together, or you have to be together, or you want to try to be together. So how do you do that? Because the more you learn about narcissistic personality disorder, the more obvious the behaviors related to it are. So it's very difficult because when you get together with the sibling, you're seeing each time you see more and more, and each time it feels worse and worse. And it makes it very difficult. One of the things that people often say to me when they're coming to me and they've had narcissistic abuse as children, they say to me, oh, now I understand. I need to share this with my sister. I need to share this with my brother. I need to tell them. And you know what I say? Don't. The reason that I say that is because you cannot wake someone up to narcissistic abuse. You can put every article you find, every podcast you find, every book you find in front of their face, and they will deny the truth of it until or unless they are ready to see it. So we cannot bring our siblings along, and I know this better than anyone, because with my education, my expertise in this topic, I tried so hard to bring my sisters along, and I couldn't. They had the book. I was able to talk to them. Every time they were hurting, I was able to talk to them and give them perspective. And though they may have seen some of it, they said they did. Truly, when it came down to the truth of it, they did not. They did not understand the depth of the healing that they suffered. So if you learn this and you want to share this with your siblings, it's not going to work, and it will backfire on you. It's going to make things worse in your relationship. We have to allow each sibling to come to their own determination of what this is. And if they do, or when they do, then you can hand them everything. You can give them all the information. You can give them my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind. And when they're ready, they may grasp it. But what I find is only one child in a family rises up out of it. The reason I say that, and I don't think you'll hear anybody else say that, but I have never seen this to fail in the hundreds and hundreds of people I have coached. Never seen this to fail. The reason is when one child rises up, sees everything clearly, and doesn't want to take part in the abuse and confusion and nonsense, the other siblings go in for their share of crumbs, because that's all anybody ever got was crumbs. Now, where there was only crumbs enough for three, now there's crumbs for two. That means they get more. So they go in and try to build that relationship with the narcissistic parent. And that furthers the divide between the relationship. So unfortunately, all siblings will not rise up out of this. And that makes it very hard. Healing from narcissistic abuse can be very lonely. It is lonely because you lose the people who you thought were your support system. You lose the people who you shared things with, who you was really candid and you open and you shared things with these people. And now who do you share it with? Because your friends don't want to hear it. Nobody wants to hear this. And they don't understand it, so they're going to say the wrong thing and shame and blame you. In addition to what I've told you about sibling relationships and how each child is in their own corner, understand that the narcissistic parent also orchestrates a divide between them. And the reason they do that is because they don't want their children to get close. Allied sibling relationships mean less control for them. So instead of promoting harmony among the children, they instigate conflicts between them. They use tactics typically like triangulation. And being at the center of all the information is so they enjoy it so much to be the center of all of this. And what they'll do is they tell one child a story about something and they slant it in the way that they want that child to perceive it. And then they'll tell another child the same story, but slant it in the way they want that child to perceive it. And then again and again around the family. And then they do things like badmouth you to your siblings, but tell your siblings not to say anything. And your siblings aren't going to say anything because they're starving for attention from that parent. They're so happy to be taken into the confidence of that parent that they wouldn't dare say anything. And they're feeling like they've really accomplished something. They're moving up in their relationship with this parent. It's an illusion, as everything else is an illusion. So they may tell one child that the other child said something about them and tell them, don't say anything. Of course they're not going to say anything. Again, they like this closeness that they're getting with that parent. So this is a very devious practice by siblings. I mean, used by narcissists. This is a call-in show. If you would like to call in, the number is 424-220-1801. 424-220-1801. If you're listening live and you have a question you want to ask in regard to your siblings or your narcissistic family, or anything really for that matter, I would love to hear it. I'd love for you to share it, and maybe I can help you through give you some tips to help you through the problem. So, that's my story. Children in families with narcissistic parents understand that their family operates by a set of unspoken rules, rules that feel confusing and painful. The only stability they have is adhering to the agenda of their parent, their narcissistic parent. Their feelings are never recognized, and it is demonstrated over and over by the parent that the children's feelings do not matter. Children in these families spend a lifetime desperately trying to get attention. If they receive any favor from their parents, it will only be scraps. Even so, they never stop trying. Another situation that happened in my family was I had left an abusive marriage, and I had a baby, and I had to go live with my abusers, my parents, because it was the only place I could go. I had nothing, not a penny, not a nickel. I had nothing, me and my baby. So I went to live there. And the greatest concern I had, of course, was keeping custody of my child, because my husband at the time was a just down and out drug addict, so bad he couldn't function. I didn't want him getting any kind of custody with the child or any kind of visitation on his own. So long story short, I needed an attorney. And attorneys in these matters are very expensive. But my parents rallied around me and they paid for attorneys, and it didn't help anything. It didn't make a bit of a difference. I had nothing to get. And I just needed basically an absolute divorce. But I did get primary custody and supervised visitations. So they spent a lot of money on that. And then I needed to get some kind of career so I could make some money and be independent. I went to school. They paid for my school. While they're doing this, my oldest sister is wanting to buy a house, and she has most of the money, but she needs just a little bit to get her over the hump so she could buy this house. And my parents totally deny her. So how does that look? They actually said to her, no, we're helping Randy now. So do you think that promotes a close relationship between me and that sister? No, it promotes resentment. And I had nothing to do with it. Nothing. And all in all, because they put out, and my parents are not rich people. They live pretty much hand to mouth. And because they gave me so much while I was living there, I felt guilty. And even when I realized that though I loved my parents, I did not like them. Still couldn't separate from them. I was enmeshed because they had given me so much. How could I walk away from them? So understand that parents do this. Narcissists do this. Whether they're parents, whether they're narcissists, whatever they are, they try to hold you with something. Often they will buy property with their children or go into business with their children or have their child come work for them. They do something that ties you to the parent. And if you've worked for your parent for 20 years, and now you decide you want to go no contact with that parent, how are you going to explain what you did for the last 20 years? Because you will have no reference. And the reference that you will have will be bad, horrible. So you're trapped. This is what they do. They trap us. They trap us at every turn. And nothing is as it seems. But, you know, I'll tell you, and I tell this story actually in Close Encounters of the Worst Kind under the sibling chapter, that my ex-husband, who, as I said, was a down-and-out junkie, drug addict, terrible, never could get better, went from one center to another trying to get help. When I met him, he was a year clean, supposedly. Maybe not. But I was very young, and I didn't recognize how serious this could be. Everything looked beautiful on the surface. But his story is very interesting as well. I could never figure out where his pain came from that kept him using, no matter what he had. He loved me. I gave him a baby that he loved. He had dreamed my daughter into life years ago. He had dreamed her, literally, by how she would look and what her name would be. And when she came, he still couldn't do it. So let me go back into what happened, why this happened. So his parents were very dysfunctional, alcoholics, and narcissists. And as a child, his mother, she wanted the daughter. So when he was a little boy, a young boy, or maybe not even a young boy, an adolescent, she would dye his hair blonde and just do things to, you know, like she would do with a daughter. But there was no love there. And his parents were very, very active in a country club. And they went there all the time. My ex-mother-in-law was Diamond Lil. They were very wealthy people. She was decked out in diamonds from head to toe. And where it wasn't a diamond, it was a rhinestone. But she glittered wherever she went. Her name was Lillian, which is perfect for Diamond Lil. So they went out a lot. And my ex had an older brother that was 2 or 3 years older. And the parents would leave the brother to babysit. Well, the brother hated my ex. He hated him because he came into this world, the brother came into this world with, he just was not a likable character. He was always in trouble. But my ex was a sweet boy that everybody loved. He had a beautiful smile. He was so engaging. Everybody loved him. And his brother, for years, tried to sabotage I can't think of the word. Anyway, how people would see him. I don't know why I can't think of the word, but how people would see him. So he needed to really, nothing was really working. He needed to really make a change. So one night, my ex was 14 years old. His brother called over a bunch of his derelict friends, and they were all shooting up at the time. And at some point, they pounced on my ex-husband, 14 years old, put a needle in his arm, and shot him up with heroin. Yeah, he was not the favorite child anymore. He liked it. He got addicted to it. And he became a bad boy. So this is another example of how far siblings can go in these kind of relationships. You know, the Lion King, if you've seen the Lion King, the brother Scar, that was my ex-brother-in-law, Scar, doing everything he could to sabotage, that's the word, to sabotage his younger brother so people wouldn't see him as such a good boy. And he ruined him, totally ruined him. And when my ex got clean, his brother was in prison for most of the time, the beginning of our relationship. When he got out, my husband wanted him to live with us. I didn't want him to live with us. I didn't know him. I didn't trust him. But he said, listen, it's my brother. We have to do this. It'll be for a short period of time. Well, in that time that his brother was with us, he got him seriously addicted again. He died, my ex died, at 30 or early 30s, I can't remember. And he had been telling one of his friends, I know my brother's trying to kill me. He keeps mixing drugs in to make me overdose. He keeps giving me drugs that are going to kill me. And I know he's going to kill me. And guess who found him dead? His older brother. Two of them alone in a house. Nobody knows what happened. I believe he killed him, but I can't say for sure. So this can go very far with these sibling relationships when you have dysfunctional parents who just look away from it. They don't want to know how you're getting along with your siblings unless you're fighting all the time. Then they want you to shut up and stop it. But other than that, they don't promote the relationships. And often, I shouldn't say often, always, there is a favorite child. So I was the favorite child. How does that look to my one sister who was scapegoated for everything in the family and the other one who my mother refused to look at? How does that look? How does that make me look? They were so envious of me being the golden child because I got what they perceived to be love. That's not what I really got. And I was very, very messed up as a result of it. But in their mind, because they were such extremes from me, they just didn't understand it. And they loved me through it. But in the back of their minds, there was always this thing, you got more than we got. And as adults, I tried to explain that many, many times, that I didn't get more than they got. I got a different dose of it. My dose was objectification. My dose was I was treated as if I was an object to be worshipped. I was not seen for who I was at all. My mother didn't know anything about who I was. And when if I did anything wrong, she blamed somebody else because I was her perfect reflection in the mirror. That's what the golden child is. And if I did something wrong, then she did something wrong. So she could never accept that I did something wrong. So it just was, you know, she was a narcissist. So she raged and the house was chaotic and she argued with my father, you know, and all that stuff. But yeah, so these roles are very detrimental to the sibling relationship, you know, and then there's roles that the children take on themselves. There's the hero, the mascot, the manipulator. There's different roles that children take on in the family to help the family function. I was the mediator. I was the one who, as a little toddler, a little girl, was trying to put out fires all the time. And my parents let me. I'd pull my mother aside. I'd pull my father aside. I'd pull my sisters aside. I'd try to calm the whole family down. That was my job. Look what I do today. But you know what's really interesting is that there were many, many years between the time I left that home and the time I began doing what I do now. So I had healing to do, and I didn't really know where I was headed with everything. But I always wanted to help people. I couldn't have done this in a healthy way before because I would have absorbed everything. Now that I've healed, I can. And I can talk to people about these horrendous issues all day long and give each person my very best and not take it in. So it's interesting, you know, how it is said that our theme throughout our life is generally what we're supposed to do. There's always some kind of theme. I was brought into this world to help people, but not to help them in a way that it took from me. I first had to develop self-love, self-esteem, and a boundary system that was ironclad. And I had to live like that till it became natural for me. For people who grow up in these families and have this affinity towards helping others, if they don't have the self-love and the boundaries and the self-esteem, what happens is they get drained every time they try to help somebody because they're not filling up their own well. We must fill our well with love constantly. We have to take care of ourselves if we want to take care of others. We must love ourselves if we want to love others in a healthy way. So for those of you who are listening and saying, yeah, I'm a caregiver, have you done what you need to do to be a proper caregiver? Are you exhausted from all the giving? Are you resentful to some people because you give so much and they never give anything back? Are you codependent? Are you a fixer? Is this your job in life? You need to fix people in order to feel valuable. These are all signs of codependency. If you have these traits that you have not healed and worked on and developed, you must come to self-love. You must. It is the first thing to do. And everything else follows. And I mean spouses, children, family, everything. You have to take care of you first. Develop the boundaries and know how to love yourself. And then you can be the greatest healer, counselor, coach in the world. You can do it all day long and it won't take anything from you because you give to yourself. So we're coming down to the end of the show, but I want to again remind you, if you tuned in late or whatever, that I am launching a brand new, very exciting course on my website, randyfine.com, that is about helping you heal the painful past that has been a roadblock in your life. The course is called Letting Go of Past Pain and Creating the Life You Deserve. This course is very comprehensive, and you will come out with a lot of tools for living. You will come out much better than you went in. But I have to warn you, it is intensive. So you have to really be ready to do this. Don't take the course if you're not ready to heal, because you're going to have to go to some places that may be a little uncomfortable. You can pace yourself through the course. It's not timed at all. Once you buy the course, you have it for as long as you want it. It's always there. So you can pace yourself. And if you find you're being triggered somewhere, you can stop. But I encourage you to check this out. At least go on my website, randyfine.com. Go to the drop-down menu to where it says online courses. The only course that's there right now is Letting Go of Past Pain and Creating the Life You Deserve. That's the course that I'm talking about, Letting Go of Past Pain and Creating the Life You Deserve. Give yourself that gift. Go through this course. I put a lot into this because I believe in healing, helping people heal. I believe in being that the impetus that helps people heal. And so what I give you in this course so much is the stages of healing to get to self-love. And there are many. So that's all I have for you today. I think it was a lot. I didn't really know what I was going to say, and I didn't know what I was going to reveal, but I tell you this from my heart. I tell you this with the utmost love for my sisters, even though I cannot have relationships with them in the physical world. I still have love. And I tell you this with love. I give this information to you with love. So you can do what you can do with it what you want. If you don't have a copy of Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, The Narcissistic Abuse Survivor's Guide to Healing and Recovery, do yourself a favor and pick up a copy. You can get a paperback, audio, or digital. All three available. I tell you this not to sell the book. I tell you this because it changes people's lives. You have never read a more comprehensive book on this topic. And I write it in my voice. I didn't record it in my voice, but I write it in my voice. So it's professionally recorded. So I encourage you to do those things. If you're listening to my show, you probably are suffering in some way. And you don't have to suffer. This is the message I always want you to have, is that you do not have to suffer. It's not that hard to fix what is broken. It took years to break it. It won't take years to fix it. When you're with the right people who know how to help you, you will fix it very quickly, very quickly. Blindingly quickly to the point where when I tell people that, they're like, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. A month into it, they're like, oh, you were right. I'm feeling so much better. So sometimes it's after one session that they feel so much better. But you don't have to suffer. There's no reason to suffer. Make yourself a priority. Make your healing a priority. And this is about you, only you. Not feeling sorry for your abuser, not worrying about everybody else and the people you have to take care of and all the things that you have to do. This is about you, and you will be a better mother, father, partner, husband or wife, employee, boss, friend, all the above to everyone. And your relationships will be real. They won't be with people who are caring about you for what you give. We don't want people to care about us for what we can give. We want people to care about us because they love us, because they know us. They like who we are. They like being with us. We don't want to be used. So there you have it. I am finished the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it helped. And hope to see you on the course, really. It's there for you. Let me give you the coupon code again. There is a coupon code that you can use to get some money off of the price. The coupon code, if you have a pen and pencil, hopefully you do by now, is, drum roll in case you're going to get one. I'll repeat it twice. PADNKUY3. That would be Paul, Amy, David, Nancy, Keith, Ursula, and Yussie. 3. PADNKUY3. You can always listen to the recording of this if you didn't get it. This coupon code is only good. It will expire on July 14th. So hurry up and get in, because I'm not going to be discounting it after this. I'm doing it for the people who are on my mailing list. I'm doing it for the people who listen to my show and the people who read my blog. So take advantage of it. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.